I think of my father, his sternness. I am Mater of Gens Aquila now, and it is the future of the Gens, the future of my people, that I must protect. You will go. I pull my fingers from her grip. Thunder rumbles, closer than I thought it would be. You will remain hidden, and you will do it with the grace with which you have done everything else, Empress Livia Aquila Farrar. Loyal to the end. Say it. My sister bites her lip, her pale eyes glowing with anger. But then she nods, as I knew she would. Loyal to the end, she says. By the time the storm has broken over Antium, Livia is well away from the capital. But my relief is short-lived. You and I have something we need to do. I will not soon forget the abuse that Marcus inflicted on Livia. I think back to a year ago, during the trials, to the nightmares that plagued me of Marcus as emperor and me doing his bidding. What does he have planned for me now?
Chapter 39. Liar. My blood transforms to lead at the sound of the djinn and their strange, layered voice. It throbs with cunning and rage. But beneath it flows a river of almost imperceptible sorrow, just like with the Nightbringer. Where is Elias? I know they will not tell me anything of worth, but I ask anyway, hoping that some response will be better than silence.
We will tell you, they croon. But you must come to us.
I'm not a fool. I rest my hand on my dagger, though doing so serves no practical purpose. I know your king, remember? You're as slippery as he is.
No tricks, liar, daughter of Mera. Unlike you, we do not fear the truth, for it is the truth that shall free us from our prison. And the truth shall free you from yours. Come to us.
Elias has never trusted the djinn. I shouldn't either. I know this. But Elias is not here, nor are the ghosts, and something is very wrong. Otherwise, he would be here. I need to get across the forest. There is no other path to Antium, to the Bloodshrike, to the last piece of the star. Standing here, agonizing over it, isn't going to do me any good. I make my way west, following the compass in my head, moving as swiftly as I can while it is still light out. Perhaps Elias is only away for a short time. Perhaps he will return. Or perhaps he doesn't know I'm here. Perhaps something has happened to him. Or, the djinn whisper,
he doesn't care. He has greater things to worry about than you.
They do not say it with malice. They simply state a fact, which makes it all the more chilling.
Our king showed you, did he not? You saw it in his eyes. Elias, walking away. Elias, choosing duty over you. He will not help you, liar. But we can. If you allow us, we will show you the truth.
Why would you help me? You know why I'm here. You know what I'm trying to do.
The truth shall free us from our prison, the djinn say again, as it will free you from yours. Let us help you.
Stay away from me, I say. The djinn falls silent. Do I dare hope that they will leave me be? A wind pushes at my back, ruffling my hair and pulling at my clothes. I jump, spinning, seeking the shadows for enemies. It is just wind. But as the night drags on, I flag, and when I can walk no more, I have no choice but to stop. A broad tree trunk serves as my shelter, and I hunker against it with my daggers in hand. The forest is strangely peaceful, and as soon as my body makes contact with the earth, the tree, I feel calmer, like I'm in a familiar place. It is not the familiarity of a well-traveled road. It is different, older, in my very blood. In the darkest hour of the night, sleep claims me, and with it, dreams. I find myself flying over the waiting place, skimming the treetops, incensed and yet terrified. My people, they are imprisoning my people. All I know is that I must get to them. I must reach them. If only I can. I awake to the overwhelming sense that something is wrong. The trees that surround me are not those I fell asleep beside. These trees are as wide as an Edison Avenue, and they glow an eerie red, as if on fire from within.
Welcome to our prison, Lyre of Sarah.
The Nightbringer materializes from the shadows, speaking almost tenderly. He brushes his strangely glowing hands against the tree trunks as he circles them. They whisper a word at him, a word I cannot make out, but he silences them with his touch. You brought me here.
My brethren brought you. Be thankful they left you intact. They longed to tear you into a thousand pieces.
If you could kill me, you'd have done it already, I say. The star protects me.
Indeed, my love.
I recoil. Don't you call me that. You don't know what love is. His back was to me, but he turns now, immobilizing me with that eerily bright stare.
Ah, but I do.
His bitterness curdles the very air. It is so ancient.
For I was born to love. It was my calling, my purpose. Now it is my curse. I know love better than any other creature alive. Certainly better than a girl who gives her heart to whoever happens by.
Tell me where Elias is.
In such a hurry, Lyre, just like your mother. Sit with my brethren a while. They have so few visitors.
You know nothing of my mother and father. Tell me where Elias is. My gorge rises as a Nightbringer speaks again. His voice feels too close, like he is forcing an intimacy I have not granted.
What will you do if I do not tell you where Elias is? Leave?
That is exactly what I'll do, I say, but my voice is weaker than I wish it to be. My legs feel strange, numb. Skies, I feel ill. I lean forward, and when my hands touch the earth, a jolt rolls through me. The word that comes to my mind is not the one I expect. Home.
The waiting place sings to you. It knows you, Lyre of Sarah.
Why? The Nightbringer laughs, and it is echoed by the djinn in the grove until it feels like it is coming from all sides.
It is the source of all magic in this world. We are connected to it, through it, to each other.
There is a lie here somewhere. I can sense it. But there is truth too, and I cannot pass the fine lines between them.
Tell me, love.
The word sounds obscene in his mouth.
Have you had visions after using your magic?
My blood goes cold. The woman.
The cell.
You sent those visions, and you've been watching me.
In truth, you shall find freedom. Let me free you, Lyre of Sarah.
I don't need your truth. I want him out of my head. But he is as devious and slippery as an eel. Together with his brethren, he twists around my mind, squeezing tighter and tighter. Why did I let myself sleep? Why did I let the djinn take me? Get up, Lyre! Escape!
You cannot escape the truth, liar. You deserve to know, child. It has been kept from you for far too long.
Where to begin?
Perhaps where you began. With your mother.
No! The air before me wavers, and I do not know if the vision is real or in my head. My mother stands before me, big with child. Me, I realize. She paces back and forth outside a cottage as father speaks to her. The thickly forested mountains of Marin rise in the distance. We must go back, Jahan, she says, as soon as the child is born.
And bring him or her with us?
My father digs his hand into the thick, unruly hair that I inherited. Laughter rings out behind him. Darin, fat-cheeked and blissfully unaware, sits with a 7-year-old Liss. My heart twists at the sight of my sister. I have not seen her face in so long. Unlike Darin, she watches everything with careful eyes, her gaze flicking back and forth between mother and father. She is a child whose happiness is gauged by the strange weather between her parents, sometimes sunny, but more often a gale.
We can't expose them to that kind of danger. Mira,
darkness. Smell comes to me before light. Apricot orchards and hot sands. I am in Sarah. My mother appears again, in leathers this time, a bow and quiver slung across her back. Her light hair is pulled back into a topknot, her stare fierce as she knocks upon a familiar weathered door. My father kneels behind her, holding me against one shoulder and Darin against the other. I am 4 years old. Darin is 6. Father kisses our faces over and over and whispers to us, though I cannot hear his words. When the door opens, Nan stands there, hands on her hips, so angry that I want to cry. Don't be angry, I want to tell her. You will miss her later. You will regret your anger. You will wish you had welcomed her with open arms. Nan catches sight of my father, of Darin, of me. She takes a step toward us. Darkness, and then an eerily familiar place. A dank room, a light-haired woman within, a woman I finally recognize. My mother. And the room is not a room. It is a prison cell.
The truth will free you from your illusions, liar of Sarah,
the Nightbringer whispers.
It will free you from the burden of hope.
I don't want it. The image of my mother won't go away. I don't want to be free. Just tell me where Elias is, I beg, a prisoner in my own mind. Let me go. The Nightbringer is silent. Torchlight bobs distantly, and the door to my mother's cell opens. Mother's bruises, her wounds, her hacked hair and emaciation are suddenly illuminated. Are you ready to cooperate? The winter in that voice is unmistakable. I will never cooperate with you. My mother spits at the feet of Keris Veturia. The commandant is younger, but just as monstrous. A high-pitched scream stabs into my ears, the scream of a child. I know who it is. Skies, I know. Liss. My sister. I writhe and scream myself to try to drown her out. I cannot see this. I cannot hear it. But the Nightbringer and his brethren hold me fast. She doesn't have your strength, Keris says to mother. Nor does your husband. He broke down, begged for death, begged for your death. No loyalty. He told me everything. He would never. Keris enters the cell. How little we know of people until we watch them break, until we strip them down to their smallest, weakest selves. I learned that lesson long ago, Mirror of Sarah. And so I will teach you. I will lay you bare, and I don't even have to touch you to do it. Another scream, this one deeper.
A man's voice. They ask about you, the commandant says. They wonder why you let them suffer. One way or another, Mera, you will give me the names of your supporters in Serra. There is an unholy joy in Keris's eyes. I will bleed your family until you do.
As she walks away, my mother roars at her, throwing herself against the door of her cell. Shadows move across the floor. A day passes, another. All the while, my mother listens to the sounds of Lys and father suffering. I listen. She grows more crazed. She tries to break out. She tries to trick the guards. She tries to murder them. Nothing works. The cell door opens, and the Koff guards drag my father in. I scarcely recognize him. He is unconscious as they toss him in a corner. Lys is next, and I cannot look at what Keris has done to her. She was just a child, only 12. Skye's mother, how did you stand it? How did you not go utterly mad? My sister shivers and curls up in the corner. Her silence, the slackness of her jaw, the emptiness in her blue eyes. They will haunt me until the day I die. Mother takes Lys in her arms. Lys doesn't react. Their bodies sway together as Mother rocks her.
A star she came into my home and lit it bright with glory.
Lys closes her eyes. My mother curls around her, her hands moving toward my sister's face, caressing it. There are no tears in Mother's eyes. There is nothing at all.
A laughter light, a gilded song, a rain cloud sparrow's story.
My mother puts one of her hands on top of Lys's head, shorn now, and another on her chin.
And when she sleeps, it's like the sun has faded, gone so cold, see?
A crack sounds, softer than in my visions. It is a small noise, like the breaking of a bird's wing. Lys slips lifeless to the floor, her neck broken by our mother's hand. I think I scream. I think that sound, that shriek, is me. In this world? In some other? I cannot get out. I cannot escape this place. I cannot escape what I see.
Mera, my father whispers. Lys, where is...
Sleeping, my love.
Mother's voice is calm, distant. She crawls to my father, pulling his head into her lap.
She's sleeping now.
I tried, but I don't know how much longer.
Do not fear, my love. Neither of you will suffer any more.
When she breaks my father's neck, it is louder. The quiet that follows sinks into my bones. It is the death of hope, sudden and unheralded. Still, the lioness does not cry. The commandant enters, looks between the bodies. You're strong, Mera, she says, and there is something like admiration in her pale eyes. Stronger than my mother was. I would have let your child live, you know. My mother's head jerks up. Despair suffuses every inch of her.
It wouldn't have been a life, she whispers.
Perhaps, Keris says.
But can you be sure?
Time shifts again. The commandant holds coals in a gloved hand as she approaches my mother, who is tied to a table. Far back in my mind, a memory surfaces.
Ever been tied to a table while hot coals burned into your throat? Cook said those words to me long ago, in a kitchen at Blackcliff. Why did Cook say those words to me?
Time speeds,
Mother's hair goes from blonde to pure snow white. The Commandant carves scars into her face, horrible, disfiguring scars, until it is no longer the face of my mother, no longer the face of the lioness, but instead the face of... Ever had your face carved up with a dull knife while a mask poured salt water into your wounds? No, I do not believe it. Cook must have experienced the same thing as my mother. Perhaps it was the Commandant's particular way of getting rebel fighters to talk. Cook is an old woman, and my mother wouldn't be. She would still be relatively young. But Cook never acted like an old woman, did she? She was strong. The scars are the same. The hair. And her eyes. I never looked closely at Cook's eyes. But I remember them now, deep set and dark blue, darker still for the shadows that lurked within. But it cannot be. It cannot.
It is true, liar, the Nightbringer says, and my very soul shudders, for I know he tells no lies. Your mother lives. You know her. And now, you are free.
Chapter 40, Elias. How did someone get all the way to the gin grove without me knowing? The border walls should have kept outsiders away. But not, I realize, if they're thin and weak. Ghosts push against one spot, far to the east, and I slow down. Do I shore up the wall, move the ghosts? Their agitation is like nothing I've seen before, almost feral in its intensity. But if there is a human in the grove, skies only know what they might be suffering at the hands of the djinn. I head for the interloper, and Martha pulls at me, his weight like an anvil chained to my legs. Ahead of me, ghosts attempt to block my path, a thick cloud that I can't see through.
We have her, Elias!
The djinn speak, and the ghosts stop their wailing. The sudden silence is unnerving. It's as if all the forest listens.
We have her, Elias, and we have torn her mind to shreds.
Who? I drag myself away from the ghosts, ignoring their cries and my Arthur's pull. Who do you have?
Come and see, usurper.
Did they somehow capture Mamie or Alfia? Dread grows in me like a weed, speeding my windwalking. Their machinations have already led to the suffering of Arborit's tribe, to Afia and Gibran being possessed by ghosts, to Mamie losing her brother, and hundreds of tribespeople dying. The Bloodshrike is too far away for them to hurt. Of all those I love, only the Shrike and one other have been spared their predations. But they cannot possibly have Lyra. She is in Edessa, hunting for a way to stop the Nightbringer. Faster, Elias, faster! I battle Ma'atha's draw, tearing through the increasingly frenzied ghosts until I reach the gin grove. At first, it looks as it always does. Then I see her, crumpled on the earth. I recognize the patchy gray cloak. I gave it to her long ago, on a night when I never could have imagined how much she'd one day mean to me. In the trees to the north, a shadow watches. Nightbringer! I leap for him, but he disappears, gone so fast that if not for his laugh on the wind, I'd have thought I'd imagined him. I am at Lyra's side in two steps, hardly believing she is real. The earth shudders more violently than it ever has before. Ma'atha is angry, but it does not matter to me. What in 10 bleeding hells have the djinn done to her? Lyra! I call to her, but when I look into her face, her gold eyes are far away, her lips parted dully. Lyra! I tip her head toward me. Listen to me! Whatever the Nightbringer said to you, Whatever he and his ilk are trying to convince you of, it's a trick. A lie.
We do not lie. We told her the truth, and the truth has freed her. She will never hope again.
I need to get her mind out of their clutches.
How can you usurp her when you cannot lay your hands on the magic?
You tell me what the hells you've done to her!
As you wish.
Seconds later, my body is as rooted to the grove as Lyra's is, and the djinn show me her purpose in coming through the waiting place. She must get to Antium, to the Bloodshrike, to the Ring. She must stop the Nightbringer. But her mission is forgotten as a fire rages in her mind, leaving her lost, wandering in a prison, forced to watch what happened to her family over and over.
We show you her story so that you can suffer with her, Elias,
the djinn say.
Cry out your rage, won't you? Cry out your uselessness. The sound is so sweet.
My sins will do nothing against this. Threats will do nothing. The djinn are in her head. A powerful yank from Ma'atha nearly knocks me to my knees, so sharp that I gasp from the pain. Something is happening out in the waiting place. I can feel it. Something is happening to the border.
Leave her then, Elias. Go and attend to your duty.
I will not leave her!
You have no choice, not if you wish the world of the living to survive.
I will not! My voices roar with rage and failure. I will not let you torment her to death, even if stopping you tears my own body to shreds. All the world can burn, but I will not simply leave her to suffer!
All things have a price, Elias Vittorius. The price of saving her will haunt you for all your days. Will you pay it?
Just let her go, please. I'm sorry for your pain, your hurt, but she did not cause it. It's not her fault. Martha, help me! Why am I begging? Why, when I know it will do no good? Only mercilessness can help me. Only abandoning my humanity, abandoning Lyra. But I can't do it. I can't pretend that I don't love her. Come back to me, Lyra! Her body is heavy in my arms, hair tangled, and I push it back from her face. Forget them and their lies. That's all they are. Come back!
Yes, Elias,
the djinn purr.
Pour your love into her. Pour your heart into her.
I wish they would shut the hells up. Come back to the world. Wherever they have taken you, whatever memory they have locked you in, doesn't matter as much as you coming back. Your people need you. Your brother needs you. I need you. As I speak, it's as if I can see into her thoughts. I can see the djinn clawing at her mind. They are strange, warped beings of smokeless flame that are nothing like the beautiful, graceful creatures I saw in the city. Lyra tries to fight them, but she weakens. You are strong, Lyra. And you are needed here. Her cheek feels like ice. You have much yet to do. Lyra's eyes are glazed over, and I shudder. I hold her now. I call to her. But she will grow old and die, while I will live on. She is the blink of an eye, and I am an age. But I can accept that. I can survive long years without her if I know that at least she had a chance at life. I'd give up my time with her. I would, if only she would wake. Please, please come back. Her body jerks once, and for one heart-stopping moment, I think she is dead. Then she opens her eyes, staring at me with bewilderment. Thank the bleeding skies. They're gone, Lyra, I say. But we have to get you out of here. Her mind will be fragile after what the djinn just put her through. Any more pushing from the ghosts or the djinn would feel torturous.
I can't walk. Could you?
Put your arms around my neck, I say, and I windwalk out of the grove with Lyra held close. Ma'atha yanks at me futilely, and the earth of the waiting place shakes and cracks. I reach out to the borders. The pressure is immense. The strain on them makes me break into a sweat. I need to get Lyra out of here so I can corral the ghosts, get them away from the edges of the waiting place, lest they break free.
Elias,
Lyra whispers.
Are you real? Are you a trick too?
No. I touch my forehead to hers. No, love. I'm real. You're real.
What's wrong with this place?
She shivers.
It's so full, as if it's about to burst. I can feel it.
Just the ghosts, I say. Nothing I can't handle. I hope. Flat patches of rolling grassland appear through the trees ahead. The Empire. The border feels even weaker now than it did when I first passed through it. Many of the ghosts have followed me, and they press against the glowing barrier, their cries rising eagerly as if they sense its weakness. I go well beyond the tree line and set Lyra down. The trees sway back and forth behind me, a frantic dance. I must return. But for just this one moment, I let myself look at her. The messy cloud of her hair, her worn boots, the tiny cuts on her face from the forest, the way her hands grip the dagger I gave her.
The djinn,
she whispers.
They told me the truth. But the truth is...
She shakes her head. The truth is ugly, I say. The truth of our parents uglier still. But we are not them, Lyra.
She's out there, Elias,
Lyra says. And I know she speaks of her mother, of Cook.
Somewhere. I can't.
She slips back into the memory again. And though the forest seethes behind me, it will have done me no good to get Lyra out of there if she ends up in the grasp of the djinn again. I take her shoulders, stroke her face. I make her look at me. Forgive her, if you can, I say. Remember that fate is never what we think it will be. Your mother, my mother, we can never understand their torments, their hurts. We may suffer the consequences of their mistakes and their sins, but we should not carry them on our hearts. We don't deserve that.
Will it always be chaos for us, Elias? Will things never be normal?
Her eyes clear as she looks at me. And she is released, for a moment, from what she saw in the forest.
Will we ever take a walk by the moonlight, or spend an afternoon making jam, or making...
Love. My body turns to fire just thinking about it.
I had dreams about you,
she whispers.
We were together.
It wasn't a dream. I pull her close. It kills me that she doesn't remember. I wish she could. I wish she could hold on to that day the way I do. I was there, and you were there. And it was a perfect slice of time. It won't always be like this. I say it like I believe it, but within my own heart, something has shifted. I feel different, colder. The change is great enough that I speak even more adamantly. Hoping that by saying what I want to feel, I will bring it to life. We will find a way, Lyra. Somehow. But if I change, if I seem different, remember that I love you. No matter what happens to me, say you'll remember, please.
Your eyes.
She looks up at me, and my breath catches at the intensity in her gaze.
They're darker, like shavers.
I can't stay. I'm sorry. I have to go back. I have to attend to the ghosts. But I will see you again. I vow it. Hurry. Get to Antium.
Wait.
She stands, still unsteady on her feet.
Don't go. Please, don't leave me here.
You're strong, I say. You are Lyra of Sarah. You are not the lioness. Her legacy, her sins, they don't belong to you any more than Kerris's legacy belongs to me.
What did you say to me?
Lyra asks.
That night before you left, months ago, when we were headed to Koth, I was sleeping in the wagon with Izzy. What did you say?
I said, you are. But Ma'arthur has lost patience. I am wrested back to the waiting place, back to Ma'arthur's side, with a force that rattles my bones.
I will find you, Lyra. I will find a way. This is not our end.
I scream it in my mind. But as soon as I get into the waiting place, the thought is dashed from my consciousness. The borders are bending, breaking. I go to reinforce them, but I am a cork in the face of a dam breaking.
All things have a price, Elias Veturius.
The djinn speak again, an inexorable truth in their voice.
We warned you.
A roar cleaves the waiting place, a ripping that seems to come from the bowels of the earth. The ghosts scream, their high keen rising as they throw themselves against the border. I have to stop them. They're too close. They'll break free.
Too late, usurper! Too late!
A collective howl goes up, and the ghosts of the waiting place, the tortured souls who are my sworn duty, break free of the border and pour into the world of the living. Their shrieks, like living death, carried on the wind.
Chapter 41. The Bloodshrike. I'm not going to the Augurs, I say to Marcus. I remember well what Cain told me just weeks ago. I will see you once more, before your end. You don't understand. They
grow a bleeding spine, Shrike.
Marcus grabs my arm and begins to drag me from the throne room.
Those eerie bastards scare everyone. We have an invasion to worry about, and they can see the future. You're coming with me to their foul little cave, unless you want to find out if you really can heal your sister's shattered kneecaps.
Damn you. He backhands me and grimaces, grabbing his head. I wipe the blood from my mouth and look around as he mutters to himself. The throne room is empty, but there are still guards nearby.
Pull yourself together, I hiss. We don't need Karras hearing about this.
Marcus takes a steadying breath and glowers at me.
Shut it.
The softness of his growl does nothing to lessen its menace. And move. The pilgrims usually clogging the trail to Mount Videns have fled, ordered back down to the city to prepare for Grimmar's approach. The path up to the Augur's cave is empty, but for Marcus, me, and the dozen masks who serve as Marcus's personal guard. The entire way I try to leash my rage. I must not act on it. As much as I hate them, they are the holy men of the Empire. Hurting one could lead to horrible consequences, and if something happens to me, then Livia and her son go unprotected. I curse myself. Even now, even when I loathe them, Some part of me is still trained to respect them. The push and pull of it makes me sick to my stomach. Just get Marcus up there and let him do the talking. Don't engage. Don't ask questions. Don't let them say anything to you. Tell them you don't want to hear whatever it is they have to say. The storm that has raged all morning squats over the mountains, soaking us and turning the path to the Augur's home into a treacherous, slippery death trap. By the time we make our way across the wide rock bowl that leads to the cave, we are covered in mud and cuts, which puts Marcus in an even fouler mood than usual. The Augur's cave is dark, without a hint of life, and I briefly hold out hope that the seers will not allow us within. It is well known that they can keep out whomever they wish to. But as we approach the mouth of the cave, blue light flares, and a shadow detaches from the rock, red eyes visible even at a distance. When we draw closer, the shadow speaks. It is the same Augur who let me in last time.
"Emperor Marcus Farrar, Bloodshrike," she says. "You are welcome here. Your men, however, must remain behind."
Like the last time I came here, the Augur walks me down a long tunnel that glows sapphire from blue fire lamps. I grip my sims as I think back to that day.
First you will be unmade. First you will be broken.
I was still Helene Aquila then. Now I am someone new. Though my mental shield didn't work against the Nightbringer, I use it anyway. If the red-eyed fiends want to root around in my head, they should at least know they aren't welcome. When we get deeper into the mountain, another Augur awaits us, one I cannot name. But from Marcus's sharp intake of breath, it's clear the Emperor knows her.
"Artan."
Marcus says the name the same way I snarl Cain's.
"Long have the Emperors of the Marshals come to the Augurs in times of need," Artan says. "You seek counsel, Emperor Marcus. I am honor-bound to offer it. Sit, please. I will speak with you."
She gestures to a low bench before clearing her throat and glancing at me.
"Alone."
The same woman who escorted us in takes my arm and guides me away. She does not speak as we walk. Distantly I hear the drip of water, and then what sounds like the ping of steel. It echoes again and again, a strange and incongruent tattoo. We enter a circular cavern, black gems glimmering along its walls, and Cain steps from the shadows. Without thinking, I reach for my blade.
"Nay, Shrike."
Cain lifts a withered hand, and my own freezes.
"There is no threat here."
I force my hand away from my sim, casting about for something, anything, to distract me from my rage. "What's that sound?" I say, of the strange ping, ping, ping. "It's irritating."
"Just the cave singing their stories," Cain says. "A few are filled with crystal, others with water. Many are as tiny as houses. Others are large enough to hold a city. But always, they sing. Some days we can hear the horns of the riverboats leaving Delphinium."
"Delphinium is hundreds of miles away," I say. "Bleeding hells. I knew there were caves and tunnels under the city, but I didn't know that the Augur's caves were so extensive. The land to the west of here is solid rock, the only caves inhabited by bears and wildcats. I assume the mountains to the east are the same." Cain watches me thoughtfully.
"You are much changed, Bloodshrike. Your thoughts are closed."
Satisfaction courses through me. I'll have to tell Harper.
"Did the Meheria teach you, as he did the Farrars?"
At my mystified look, Cain clarifies.
"You refer to him as the Nightbringer."
"No," I snap, and then, "why do you call him Meheria? Is that his name?"
"His name, his history,
his birthright, his curse. The truth of all creatures, man or djinn, lies in their name. The Nightbringer's name was his making, and it will be his unmaking. He tilts his head. Did you come to ask about the Nightbringer, Bloodshrike? I have no desire to be here, I say. Marcus ordered my presence. Ah, let us make civil conversation then. Your sister, she is well? Soon to be a mother, of course. If the Commandant doesn't kill her first, I say, if she survives childbirth. And even though I do not wish to, I seek the answer to those questions in his eyes. I find nothing. He paces around the cave, and unwillingly I fall into step with him. The tribespeople say that the heavens live under the feet of the mother, he says. So great is their sacrifice. And indeed, no one suffers in war more than the mother. This war will be no different. Are you saying Livia is going to suffer? I want to shake the answers from him. She's safe now. Cain fixes me with his stare. No one is safe. Have you not yet learned that lesson, Bloodshrike? Though he sounds merely curious, I sense an insult in his words, and my fingers inch toward my warhammer. You wish to cause me pain, Cain says, but already my every breath is torture. Long ago, I took something that did not belong to me, and I and my kin have spent every moment since paying for it. At my utter lack of sympathy, he sighs. Soon enough, Bloodshrike, he says, you will see my brethren and me brought low. And you shall need no hammer nor blade, for we shall undo ourselves. The time to atone for our sins approaches. His attention shifts to the hallway behind me, as it does for your emperor. A moment later, Marcus appears, face grim. I nod a curt goodbye to Cain. I hope I never bleeding see him again. As we walk out of the tunnel and down to our men, clustered between boulders to escape the lashing rain, Marcus looks over at me. You will be in charge of the defense of the city, Marcus says. I will tell the generals. Most of them are far more seasoned than I am at dealing with marauding armies, my lord. The strength of the butcher bird is the strength of the empire, for she is the torch against the night. Your line will rise or fall with her hammer. Your fate will rise or fall with her will. When Marcus looks at me, I know for an instant how Cain must have felt when I looked at him. Pure hate radiates from the emperor, and yet he is strangely diminished. He is not telling me everything the augur said. Did the augur say anything else?
That hag hasn't been wrong yet, Marcus says. Not about me. Not about you. So whether you like it or not, Shrike, Antium's defense is in your hands.
It is deep night by the time we approach the northern gates to the capital. Teams of plebeians fortify the walls, a legionnaire bellowing at them to work faster. The acrid reek of tar fills the air as soldiers lug buckets of it up ladders to the top of our defences. Fletchers transport wagon loads of arrows, divided into tubs for the archers to grab easily. Though the moon is high, it seems as if there is not a single sleeping soul in the city. Vendors hawk food and ale, and scholar slaves carry water to those working. This will not last. When the Karkans come, the civilians will be forced to retreat into their homes to wait and see whether their brothers and fathers, uncles and cousins, sons and grandsons can hold the city. But in this moment, as all the people come together, unafraid, my heart swells. Come what may, I am glad I am here to fight with my people. And I am glad I am the Bloodshrike, charged with leading the marshals to victory. And I will lead them to victory, over the Karkans and the Commandant. Marcus appears to notice none of this. He is lost in thought, striding forward without looking at all those who labor for his empire. My lord, I say, perhaps take a moment to acknowledge the workers.
We have a bleeding war to plan, you fool.
Wars succeed or fail based on the men who fight them, I remind him. Take one moment. They will remember. He regards me with irritation, before breaking away from his men to speak with a group of orc soldiers. I watch from a distance, and from the corner of my eye I notice a group of children. One, a girl, wears a wooden silver-painted mask over her face as she fights a slightly smaller girl, who is presumably posing as a barbarian. The cluck of their wooden swords is just one more instrument in the frantic symphony of a city preparing for war. The masked girl spins under the other's sim before delivering a kick to her bottom and pinning her with a boot. I smile and she looks up, pulling off her mask hastily. She offers a clumsy salute. The other girl, who I realize must be a younger sister, stares open-mouthed.
Elbow up!
I fix the girl's arm. Hand perfectly straight, and the tip of your middle finger should be at the center of your forehead. Keep your eyes on the space between you and me. Try not to blink too much. When she's got it, I nod. Good, I say. Now you look like a mask.
Chrissa says I'm not big enough.
She looks to her still-staring sister.
But I'm going to fight the Karkans when they come.
Then we'll surely defeat them. I look between the girls. Take care of each other, I say. Always. Promise me. As I walk away, I wonder if they will remember the vow they made me 10 years from now, 20. I wonder if they'll still be alive. I think of Livy, far away, I hope. Safe. That fact is the only thing that gives me comfort. We will defeat Grimmar's army. We are the superior fighting force. But the warlock is a clever adversary, and it will be a hard battle. Skies know what will happen in that chaos. Cain's words haunt me.
No one is safe.
Curse the Commandant for bringing this upon us out of her greed. Curse her for caring more about becoming Empress than about the Empire she seeks to rule. Marcus shouts at me to get moving. When we return to the palace, it is a hive of activity. Horses, men, weaponry, and wagons clog the gates as the palace guards sandbag the outer walls and hammer in planks across the entrance gates. With so many people coming in and out, it will be difficult to keep the place secure against the Commandant's spies and her assassins. Come for Marcus, Karras, I think. Do my work for me, but you'll never get your hands on my sister or her child again. Not while I live and breathe. As we approach the throne room, there's a buzz in the air. I think one of the courtiers whispers Karras's name, but Marcus walks too fast for me to linger and listen. The throne room doors fly open as Marcus strides toward them. A sea of illustrious nobles mills within, waiting to hear what the Emperor will say about the approaching army. I feel no fear in the air, only a grim sense of determination and a strange tension, as if everyone knows a secret they aren't willing to share. The source of it becomes apparent moments later, as the waves of Illustrians part to reveal a small blonde woman in bloodied armor, standing beside a tall, equally blonde woman, heavy with child. The Commandant has returned to Antium, and she has brought my sister with her.
Chapter 42. Liar. The day Mother gave me her armlet, I was 5. Nan's curtains were drawn. I could not see the moon. Pop must have been there. Darren, Liss, and Father too. But I remember Mother's crooked smile most clearly. Her lapis eyes and long fingers. I sat in her lap, trying to tuck my cold feet into her warm shirt. "You're not, liar," she'd said. "You're an Ifrit of the North, trying to turn me into an icicle." Someone called out to her. "Time to go." She whispered to me to keep the armlet safe,
Then she wrapped her arms around me, and though she squeezed too tightly, I did not care. I wanted to pull her into me. I wanted to keep her. "We will see each other again." She kissed my hands, my forehead. "I swear it."
"When?"
"Soon." The courtyard gate creaked as she slipped through it. She smiled back at me and Darin, huddled between our grandparents. Then she stepped into the night, and the darkness swallowed her up. I reel from what the Nightbringer showed me, from the crawling feeling of him and his kin all over my mind. I hold the armlet Elias gave me, and I do not let go. I'm free of the djinn now. As I stumble away from the forest, as the voices of the ghosts peak, I move more swiftly. The dead will rise, and none can survive. Shaver's prophecy rings in my mind. Something has gone terribly wrong within the waiting place, and I need to get as far away as possible. I run, trying to remember again what I meant to do, trying to get the Nightbringer's voice out of my head. Musa marked a village on my map. I must get there, meet his contact, and get to Antium. But before then, I need to pull the shards of my mind off the ground and put them back together. I cannot change what is done. I can only move forward and hope to the skies that before I meet Cook again, I've made my peace with what she did to Father and Liss, with what she endured, with what she sacrificed for the resistance. I make my way northwest. A pair of hills rises a few miles ahead, with a dip in the middle that should shelter the village of Myrtium. Musa's contact is meant to await me there. Since it's martial territory, I should use my magic to become invisible. But I cannot bear the thought of more visions, of seeing more pain and suffering. I cannot bear the thought of seeing her. I think of Darin. Did he know about what Mother did? Is that why he tensed up every time I spoke of her? I wish to the skies that he was here now. Rattled though I may be, I have the wits to wait until dark before I creep toward the village proper. The summer night is warm, the only noise a gentle breeze blowing in off a nearby creek. I feel louder than a horse with bells on as I slink along the walls. The inn is the central building in the village, and I watch for a long time before getting closer. Musa told me little of his contact, for fear that the knowledge could be extracted by our enemies if I am caught. But I know that he is not a marshal, and that he will be waiting within the inn, by the fire. I am to cloak myself, whisper to him that I've arrived, and then follow his instructions. He will take me to the Mariner Embassy in Antium, where I'll get maps of the palace and the city, information about the Bloodshrike, and where she will be. Everything I'll need to get in, get the ring, and get the hells out. Gold light spills out into the streets from the inn's wide, rounded windows, and the tap room is full with agitated conversation drifting out in bits.
If the Shrike can't stop them, how the bleeding hells is she supposed to stop them with only... City will never be taken. Those pigs don't know how to fight.
I keep to the shadows, trying to see into the inn from across the street. It is impossible. I must get closer. The inn has a series of smaller side windows, and the alleys around it are quiet. So I skitter across the square, hoping no one sees me, and climb onto a crate, peeking through one of the windows. It offers a decent view of the room, but so far, everyone here is a marshal. I peer past the barkeep, through the thicket of serving maids pouring out drinks and lads delivering plates of food. The long bar is crowded with villagers, all of whom seem to be talking at once. How the hells am I supposed to find him in this mess? I'll have to cloak myself in invisibility. I have no choice.
Hello, girl.
I nearly jump out of my skin. When the hooded figure appears behind me, when her voice rasps a greeting, all I can think is that the Nightbringer has somehow followed me here, to this tiny village, that he is playing more tricks on my mind. But the figure steps forward and lowers her hood to to reveal moon-white hair that never belonged on her, and midnight blue eyes too shadowed to be familiar, and violently scarred skin that I never noticed was unwrinkled until now. Her fingers are stained a deep, strange Titian. Her diminutive height disorients me. All these years, I thought she was tall.
Girl.
I reach out a hand to touch her, and she shies away. How can this be real? How can I be staring into Mother's face after so long? But of course, it is real. And the Nightbringer somehow knew she would be waiting. Why else torment me with her true identity? He could have shown me who she was weeks ago, any time I used my invisibility. But he didn't, because he knew this is when it would hit me the hardest. Part of me wants to run to her, feel her hands on my skin, hold them in my own. I wish Darren were here. I wish Izzy were here. But the part of me that thinks Mother is stifled to silence by the darker part of me that screams, liar. I want to shout and curse at her and ask her every question that has plagued me since the moment I learned who she is. Understanding dawns on her face. Who told you? Her cold eyes are unfamiliar. Can't have been Musa. He doesn't know. No one does. Except Kerris, of course. The Nightbringer, I whisper. The Nightbringer told me who you are. Who I was. She draws up her hood and turns to the darkness. Come, we'll talk on the way. Marrow deep panic grips me when she turns from me. Don't leave. I want to follow her. And at the same time, I never want to see her again. I'm not going anywhere with you, I say, until you tell me what the hell's happened to you. Why didn't you say anything at Blackcliff? You slaved for Kerris for years. How could you? She clenches and unclenches her fists, just like Darren when he is upset. I dip my head, but she will not meet my stare. Her face twitches, her mouth curving into a grimace. Listen to me, girl, she says. We have to go. You have a mission, do you not? Don't bleeding forget it. The mission. The mission, how can you? I throw up my hands and walk past her. I'll make my own way. I don't need you. I don't. But after only a few steps, I turn back. I cannot leave her. I missed her for so many years. I have longed for her from the age of 5, when she was taken from me. We've a long road ahead. Nothing about how she speaks sounds like the Mother I knew. This is not the woman who called me Cricket, or tickled me until I couldn't breathe, or promised me she'd teach me how to shoot a bow as well as she did. Whoever she is now, she is Mira of Sarah, no longer. There will be plenty of time for you to scream at me on the way. I'd welcome it. Her scarred mouth lifts in a sneer. But we cannot delay. The blood strike is in Antium. And Antium is where we must go. But if we don't hurry, we'll never get inside. No, I whisper to her. We settle this first. This is more important. And in any case, you must have a dozen ways of sneaking in. I do, Cook says. But there are tens of thousands of Karkins marching on the capital. And all the sneaking in the world won't do us a whit of good if they surround the city before we get there.
Chapter 43 The Bloodstrike. Farris and Raelius are both pale as ghosts when I meet them in Livia's quarters, rattled by what they have just survived, each bleeding from a dozen wounds. I have no time to coddle them. I need to know what the hell's happened out there, and how Kerris got the best of us again. It was a Karkin attack. Farris paces back and forth across Livia's sitting room, while her women settle her in her bedroom. 200 of those woad loving demons. They came out of bleeding nowhere. They were waiting, Raelius growls as he ties off a bandage on his leg.
Maybe not for the Empress specifically, but for an opportunity, certainly. If Karis hadn't shown up with her men, we'd have been in a bad spot. If Karis hadn't shown up, I say in irritation, Grimmar and his hordes wouldn't have either. She's working with them. She did this so she could get to Livia. Thank the skies for you and the other masks. She must have realized she couldn't kill you all, so she decided to play the hero instead. Devious, true, but just like the Commandant. She is always adaptable. And now the plebeians in the city are hailing her as a hero for saving the life of the half-plebeian heir, as she probably knew they would. Go clean up, I say. Triple the watch around the Empress. I want her food tasted a day in advance. I want one or the other of you present when it is prepared. She doesn't leave the palace. If she wants to get out, she can take a walk in the gardens. The men leave, and I go over and over what they have said as I await the arrival of Dex, whom I sent to get Livia's midwife. When he finally returns, after hours, it is with a different woman from the one I'd personally chosen to tend to Livia.
The first one is gone, Shrike, Dex tells me as the new midwife bustles into Livia's rooms. Left the city, apparently, along with every other midwife I tried to track down. This one only came because she's a mariner. Whomever the hell's Karis Veturia sent to frighten all those women probably didn't have a chance to get to her.
I curse, keeping my voice low. Karis saved my sister from the Karkans because it suited her needs. The plebeians sing her praises. Now she'll seek to kill Livia quietly. Plenty of women die in childbirth, especially if they are delivering without a midwife. What of the barracks physicians? Surely one of them can deliver a baby. They know battlefield wounds, Shrike, not childbirth. That's what midwives are for, apparently. Their words, Dex winces at my wrath, not mine. The new midwife, a skinny mariner with gentle hands and a booming voice that would put any martial drill sergeant to shame, smiles at Livia, asking her a series of questions.
Keep this one alive, Dex, I murmur. I don't care if you have to put a dozen guards on her and live with her in the Blackguard barracks. You keep her alive and find a backup. This cannot possibly be the only midwife left in the entire city.
He nods, and though I've dismissed him, I notice his reluctance to leave. Out with it, Atreus.
The plebeians, he says. You've heard that they're rising in support of the Commandant.
Well, it's gotten worse.
How the hells could it get worse?
The story about her murdering the highborn Illustrians who wronged her has been making the rounds, Dex says. The Paters are infuriated, but the plebeians are saying that Karis stood up to those more powerful than her. They're saying that she defended a plebeian man she loved, that she fought for one and took rightful vengeance. They're saying the Illustrians who died got what they deserved.
Hells. If the Commandant now has plebeian support instead of Illustrian, I haven't hurt her at all. I've just managed to shuffle her list of allies.
Let the rumour play, I say. At Dex's nod, I sigh. We'll have to find another way to undermine her. At that moment, the midwife pokes her head out, gesturing me into Livia's quarters.
Hey, strong as a bull!
She beams at me, patting Livia's belly with affection.
He'll bruise a rib or two before he joins us, I'd bet my life on it. But the Empress is doing fine, as is the child. A few weeks more, lass, and you'll be holding your precious babe in your arms.
Should we do anything for her? Some sort of tea, or... I realise I sound like an idiot. Teas, Shrike, truly?
Gold rose petals and goat's milk every morning until her own milk comes in, the midwife says, and wildwood tea twice a day.
When the woman is finally gone, Livy sits up, and I am surprised to see a knife clutched in her hands.
Have her killed, she whispers.
I raise an eyebrow.
The midwife? What? Gold rose petals, Livy says, are used when a woman is past her due date. They're meant to make a baby come more quickly. I'm still a few weeks away. It wouldn't be safe for him to come now.
I call Dex in immediately. When he leaves, weapons in hand, Livia shakes her head.
This is Karis, isn't it? All of it. The Karkan attack, the midwife's leaving, this midwife. I'll stop her, I vow to my sister. I don't expect you to believe it, because all I've done is fail, but... No. Livia takes my hand. We don't turn on each other, Hel, Shrike. No matter what happens. And yes, we must stop her. But we must also keep the support of the plebeians. If they support Karis now, you cannot speak against her publicly. You must walk that line, sister. We cannot put this child on the throne if the plebeians don't see him as one of their own. And they won't. Not if you cross Karis. Evening sees me in Marcus's war room, locked in an argument with the paters, wanting nothing more than to beat all of them into silence before doing what I wish. General Caecilius, who is turning out to be as irritating as his twisted uncle, the warden, paces before the large map laid out on the table, stabbing at it occasionally.
If we send a small force to stop Grimar, he says, we are wasting good men on a lost cause. It's a suicide mission. How can 500, even 1,000 men, stand against a force 100 times that?
Avitas, who has joined me in the war room, gives me a look. Don't lose your temper, the look says. If we send a large force, I say, for the 1,000th time, we leave Antium vulnerable. Without the legions from Estium and Silas, we have only 6 legions to hold the city. Reinforcements from the tribal lands, or Navium, or Tiberium, would take more than a month to reach here. We must send a smaller attack force to cause as much damage as possible. It's such a basic tactic that at first I am stunned that Caecilius and a few of the other paters resist so much. Until I realize, of course, that they are using this opportunity to undermine me, and by extension, Marcus. They might not trust the Commandant anymore, but that doesn't mean they want Marcus on the throne. For his part, the Emperor's attention is fixed on Karis Futuria. When he does finally look at me, I can read his expression as clearly as if he shouted the words, "Why is she here, Shrike? Why is she still alive?" Those hyena eyes of his flare, promising pain for my sister, and I look away.
"Why is the Shrike leading the force?" Pater Rufius demands of me. "Would not Karis Futuria be a better choice? I do not know if you understand this, my Lord Emperor, but it is highly..."
His sentence ends in a yelp as Marcus casually flings a throwing knife at him, missing him by a hair. The sound of Rufius's squeal is deeply satisfying.
"Speak to me like that again," Marcus says, "and you'll find yourself without a head. Karis was barely able to hold Navium's harbor against the barbarian fleet."
Avitas and I exchange a glance. This is the first time the Emperor has dared to say a word against the Commandant.
"The Shrike," Marcus goes on, "took back the harbor and saved thousands of plebeian lives. The decision is made. The Shrike will lead the force against the Karkans."
"But my lord..."
Marcus's giant hand is around Rufius's throat so fast that I almost didn't see him move.
"Go on," the Emperor says softly. "I'm listening."
Rufius gasps his apology and Marcus drops him. The pater scurries away, a rooster who has escaped the stew pot. The Emperor turns to me.
"A small force, Shrike. Strike and run. Take no prisoners. And do not waste our forces if you don't have to. We'll need every last man for the assault on the city."
From the corner of my eye, I notice Karis watching me. She nods a greeting, the first time she has acknowledged me since returning to Antium with my sister. My spine tingles in warning. That look on her face, cunning, calculated. I saw it as a student at Blackleaf, and I saw it months ago, here in Antium, before Marcus killed my family. I know that look now. It is the look she gets when she's about to spring a trap. Avitas arrives in my office just after the sun has set.
"All is prepared, Shrike,"
he says. The men will be ready to leave at dawn. Good. I pause and clear my throat. Harper, perhaps Bloodshrike, Arvitas says. You are considering telling me that I should not go, that I should remain here to keep an eye on our enemies and to remain close to the Emperor, should he need it. I open and close my mouth, taken aback. That was exactly what I was going to suggest. Forgive me. Arvitas looks tired, I notice. I've been leaning on him too much. But that is exactly what the Commandant would expect. She is, perhaps, counting on it. Whatever she has planned, you surviving isn't a part of it. And you have a much better chance of surviving if you have someone who knows her watching your back. What the hells is she up to, I say, beyond just trying to take the throne, I mean. I've reports that a man of Gens Veturia was seen at the Hall of Records. She's had the paters of the three biggest illustrian gens over to her villa in the few hours she's been back. She even had the Master of the Treasury over. She killed that man's son and tattooed her triumph onto her own body, Harper. It was 10 years ago, but she still did it. Those men should hate her. Instead, they are breaking bread with her. She's wooing them back to her side, Harper says. She's trying to rattle you. You took her by surprise in Navium. She won't be taken by surprise again, which is why I should come with you. At my hesitation, impatience sparks on his face. Use your head, Shrike. She had Captain Alistair poisoned. She had Favrus poisoned. She got to the Bleeding Empress. You're not immortal. She can get to you too. Be smart about this, for the love of skies. We need you. You cannot play into her hands. I don't consider my next words. They just come out. Why do you care so much what happens to me? Why do you think? His words are sharp, lacking his usual care, and when his green eyes meet mine, they are angry. But his voice is cool. You are the Bloodshrike. I am your second. Your safety is my duty.